Hey guys, it's Jen back again with episode 43. We're getting there. I am so happy. And I've done the math. We will be having a Samhain or Halloween, if you prefer, All Saints Day, Day of the Dead, take your pick, anniversary. We will be celebrating our 52nd podcast. I believe it is, it's the week of Halloween. So whenever we decide to put it out there, Carrie, what you think about that?
I think that would be apropos and completely perfect.
Absolutely.
Outstanding.
Oh, yeah, I completely freaked out, though. I thought our first podcast was on October 27th. The very first podcast we ever did. I thought it was on October 27th. So I'm doing the math to see when we're going to have our anniversary. And it comes up to like the 25th of October. I'm like, that's impossible because we've missed 2 weeks. We did not do a show. So it should have been 2 weeks past the actual yearly anniversary that we would do the 52nd. Okay, so I went nuts for about 20 minutes trying to figure out, because it's not mathematically possible for us to end up that even with 52 episodes, having missed 2 weeks. Freak
gotcha.
Me out. I'm going
what
nuts.
Happened.
I'm going nuts. I went back to Podbean to verify my dates and realized I had missed the first page of podcasts. So, we started on the 17th. Or on the, 17th, I think. 17th, the 21st, and then like the 28th or something. So yeah, I missed 2 episodes, which is why it came out so even, because there were the 2 episodes I was missing. So yeah, I drove myself insane and then calmed down and realized that, hey, all you gotta do is check the numbers.
Yeah,
math eventually will work out.
That's right.
I love it. That's why I love it. It doesn't change. And no, I'm not talking...
Math.
No, I'm not talking about algebra and trigonometry. I'm talking about just pure math. But yeah. So I've been going nuts pretty much ever since. And that was about 6 o'clock this morning. So what are we doing today? We were going to do Astronaut's Wife. The Astronaut's Wife is what we're going to do. Unfortunately, guys, look, I tried. I really did. And I'm usually very, very good at research, and I can usually find something even when people say there's nothing there to find. Trust me, on this movie, there is nothing to find. I tried to find interviews. I looked for written reviews. I'm talking really, really, really little, very little about this movie. So I think we decided to go a different direction, did we not?
We did.
But I think we picked a good one. We are actually doing this week From Hell, which is the one of the adaptations, one of the many, of the story of Jack the Ripper. Quite a bit of it has been embellished, but they did stick very, very close to the actual facts when it comes to the murders. So it's a very impressive movie, but we'll get to that. Do we have anything else going on we need to talk about first, I think? I think we have some Johnny Depp news.
Yeah.
You want to tell it?
So Mads Mikkelsen apparently has given out, and he's an incredibly accomplished actor. I love him in so many roles.
And he's another degree of separation.
Yeah, he's two degrees of separation.
Right. You pointed it out. He played, you gotta call the name, I can't do it.
What, Mads?
Yeah, the character he played. He played in Doctor Strange. Do you remember his character's name?
And it's hard to pronounce, Caecilius.
That's it, Caecilius. Yeah.
Yeah, Caecilius, the guy with the stained kind of eyes.
Yeah.
They were in like a magic cult.
Looked like he fell asleep at a party and, you know, some of his girlfriends decided to play.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so He had a lot of good things to say. I actually do have that pulled up. I have it right in front of me. So, he was asked if, because of the win, the lawsuit win, that Johnny might be returning to Fantastic Beasts. And he said he, quote, might. His comment went a little bit further than that, though. He said he won the suit, the court case, so let's see if he comes back. He might. I'm a big fan of Johnny. I think he's an amazing actor. I think he did a fantastic job. There was no way that I could copy it. It's just so much him. That would be creative suicide. Oh, yeah. Glad he recognizes that. He's smart. Too many actors don't. He continues by saying, so we had to come up with something else, something that was mine, and built a bridge between him and me. He did say that it was kind of intimidating trying to do this role because of the way Johnny Depp fans acted and reacted toward him. Quote, his fans were very, very sweet, but they were also very stubborn. I didn't interact too much with them, but I could understand why they had their hearts broken. So I thought that was a really, really sweet, I mean, almost tribute to Johnny. And the impact that he has on, you know, his fans, his friends, people that work with him, people that don't even know him. You know, he's a huge, huge presence. So, Johnny, we're with you. We're pulling for you. And Mads, we love you too, man. Don't think we don't.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Is there anything else? I don't think I don't think the Hurtabeast has popped her head up lately since last week. But
Nope, not at all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I couldn't find the name of the podcast. They did not disclose it. But there's a podcast, I apologize, it's a YouTuber, that has gotten a cease and desist order from Amber Heard's lawyers because of some of the negative things she's been saying. So, good for you, girl. You go. It did not disclose the name of the YouTuber or the channel. It just said that there was a YouTuber that got a cease and desist.
A cease and desist? Gotcha.
Yep. So, hey, you know what? make them sue you, honey. Make them sue you.
You might get a little money out of it.
Hey, if nothing else, you'll get a hell of a lot of publicity. They'll have to disclose your name then.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the reasons why they did not disclose the name is because they did not want to give this person publicity.
Yeah, they don't need further litigation. They really don't. You know, you can do a cease and desist, but oh God, we're going to record again.
Oh, please. Yeah. But Amber's lawyers are going, bitch, I swear to God, anything else, I swear one more thing and I'm out of here. I quit.
Yeah. She's heard it before.
I mean, she's got the appeal with Johnny. She's got her insurance company is suing her. And now the cease and desist? Really? Does she really need any more trouble? Really?
Right.
You know, you would think she's got as much as she can handle. Yeah. Well, see, that's what happens when you don't do your research, honey doll. You picked the wrong one. Because you know what? He was not the one, and that was not the day.
Nope.
All right. We've got a really cool, very eclectic bunch of facts for you today from the From Hell movie. It's a 2001 release. Appropriately enough, it was released in October. It was directed by the Hughes brothers, Albert and Alan.
The Hughes brothers.
The Hughes brothers, yes. And they are some devious individuals, is all I got to say before we get into it. So, this was also written by Rafael Iglesias and Terry Hayes. Very, very known, from what I can find, for taking books, comics, even music, and transmitting it to screen. So, apparently they're really good at it, and according to this movie, I would agree.
Yeah. The Hughes brothers were an unusual pick for directing.
Not as unusual as the first choice for director.
Who was the first choice?
Mel Gibson.
Okay, that's pretty unusual.
Oh, and it ties another one of my absolute favorite series, favorite movie series. Speaking of Fantastic Beasts, Robbie Coltrane is in this one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
right.
Hagrid himself plays Sergeant George Godley. So, and then you've got Ian Cuthbert playing William Gull. Heather Graham as Mary Kelly. And, of course, Inspector Frederick Aberline. Am I pronouncing it right? Aberline?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. As Johnny Depp as Inspector Aberline. So, it goes from, like, an all-star to absolutely nobody knows anybody kind of cast. Yeah. You've got two or three, four really good names, but...
Oh, yeah, and they're real genre names, you know?
Yes.
You got Robbie Coltrane, who's got kind of the Harry Potter thing. Ian Holm, he was massive in the Lord of the Rings movies,
yes.
The Hobbit movies.
Yep.
a lot of genre people.
Now, Johnny almost turned this role down. Hey, actually, the first time they approached him, he did turn it down. You know why?
Why?
Do you remember there's a character he plays that is very, very similar to the Aberline character that he just finished the movie and it was released in 1999?
Sounds like Hunter S. Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson? Nah, how about Sleepy Hollow?
Gotcha.
He had just gotten done with... Oh, no, no problem.
Well, I was thinking the drug-addled...
Oh, okay, yeah, not the scientist kind of dude, but the drug side of it, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and actually, that one came out in either 99 or 2000.
Yeah,
so, if you're in Loathing in Las Vegas.
That's right.
Definitely. That one came out right there around the same time, too. So, hey, you take the two characters, put them together, you've got Aberline. Now, the budget for this film was, believe it or not, $35
million. Wow, that's a lot more than I thought it would be.
Really? That's really low considering the star power you've got.
Yeah, I guess paying everybody's salary.
You've got to understand, at that point in time, Johnny was getting 10 mil to show up. Okay, that's 10 right there. That leaves you 25 for the rest of the movie. That's paying the people, that's special effects, that's everything. Yeah, that's tiny. But they made a fantastic movie with it. It actually, the box office, it did not blow the charts, but I still did fairly well, 74.6 mil. So it doubled its budget, so that was good. The critics on this one, I very rarely see where they have a attitude. You know, oh, it's okay. It's either I loved it or I hated it. Oh, no. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 57%. Metacritic gave it a 54%. The CinemaScore for as an average was a B-. However, Roger Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up, so that's a plus.
Yeah,
and Carrie, I'm sure you know where the title of this comes from and where a lot of the character influence of this comes from, since you're a comic book fan.
Well, I know it comes from Hell, and that was in Alan Moore comic book, but the title From Hell, from that came from the From Hell letter that was originally sent by allegedly Jack the Ripper. But yeah, it was a graphic novel by Alan Moore. Eddie Gamble was the artist.
Absolutely.
Huge.
However, I am very impressed because both the graphic novel and the movie, yes, were both named for the letter that showed up.
Yeah.
And I had actually forgotten about it. About the letter, because everything else kind of eclipsed it as I was doing my research. Until I came across a lot of the actual crime scene, reports, photographs, drawings, that were used in this movie. They, Scotland Yard, gave them the case files. And they used a lot of the real stuff from the actual murders to recreate for this movie.
Yeah.
And From Hell was one of the letter was one of the things they mentioned when they were talking about it. Now, when I said that the Hughes brothers were devious, kind of sneaky and a little kind of creepy too. One of the things they did, without informing anybody or any of that, is some of the more bloody, gory, disgusting, really gross crime scene photos.
Yeah.
They took, enlarged, and pinned them around the police precinct set in places that the cast would happen upon them, like, and go, oh, just to see if they could do what they could for the performers to have an edgier feel to them.
Yeah, I'm nice.
Like, yeah, that was ooh. I mean, think about it. You're practicing your lines and everything, and you turn around and you know there's this bloody body right there. Ooh, not nice.
Right.
But yeah, the graphic novels. It was comic book first, and then it was actually released in its full collection. That was published by Top Shelf Productions, and it was released in 1999. So it was released just before this movie was set to start filming. In the full graphic novel deal. And yeah, when I saw that the movie was actually pulled from a comic book, I had my fingers crossed, please let it be Marvel, please let it be Marvel, just so we would have, then we could say Johnny Depp is a Marvel actor. Regardless.
Right.
No, unfortunately, I did like Top Shelf when it was around, but yeah, it's no Marvel. But yeah, however, not only do we have Robbie Coltrane,
and by the way, just letting you know, Top Shelf ended up getting absorbed into IDW, which IDW Publishing does a lot of fantastic comics.
I'm trying to think. IDW, I know I've seen some of their work, but I'm not sure that I'm familiar with the company.
Well, they do a whole lot of restoration of old kind of comic books and that sort of thing. Steve Ditko stuff. Felix the Cat.
Oh.
Popeye, those people. But
okay.
Guess where they... I'm going to blow your mind. Guess where they are based?
I have no idea.
Marietta.
What?
Marietta, Georgia.
So they are right up the road. Cool.
They are truly, literally up the road from you.
I may have to do a road trip and get some time and just run up there and be like, hey, you guys want to be on a podcast?
Yeah.
Because I am having absolutely, as a sidebar, I'm having absolutely zero luck getting a hold of my cosplayers that I've been trying to get for about the last 4 months to give me a call and be on the podcast with us one day. Johnny Depp, Captain Jack Sparrow, very, very popular cosplay. I cannot find the first one that will return my phone calls. Loki is the same way, but Loki is still very highly in demand. Jack Sparrow is as well, but apparently for some reason around here in this area, it's all about the Loki. So if you're a Loki cosplayer, dude, you don't have time to call me. I got you. No problem. But yeah, I can't get anybody to return a call. So, hey, we may start hitting comic book companies next.
Yeah.
I might as well. But yeah, Top Shelf did it. There is another kind of link too. They originally had Sean Connery cast as Aberline. He was the original pick for Aberline.
Wow, that would have been interesting.
However, he dropped out at the last minute And they went through several different actors discussing and calling and meeting before they finally figured out who they thought would be best, which is Johnny Depp. Let's see, we have I know it's here somewhere. I've got to start marking my notes. And of course, it has disappeared. I know I wrote it down, but it went poof. So I will run across it as I'm going through my notes. We'll do it that way. But there is another movie that is also written from a comic book written by
Alan Moore,
thank you. And that was also made into a movie that was produced by 20th Century Fox. Know which one that one was?
Gonna go with a guess, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Absolutely, 2003 release. And guess who starred in that one? Sean Connery.
That's right.
Yes, yes. And not only were they both written by the same person, they were both produced by 20th Century Fox. They also both had the same person do the score for them for both movies. And that was, I believe, Trevor Jones? Is that his name? I think that's right.
Yeah, music by Trevor Jones.
Yeah, that's Trevor right. Jones.
He actually started with doing, like, music for Excalibur, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth.
Right. Oh,
he
yeah.
He did the music for a lot of those, like, Jim Henson, you know, early movies.
Yeah. One of note that he did not do the music for, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was consulted. Labyrinth.
No, he did do the music for Labyrinth.
He did do the music. David Bowie did the music for Labyrinth.
No, well, he did the if you will, orchestral compositions.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So Trevor Jones did the actual score. And David Bowie pretty much just handled the songs.
The songs and their scores, right.
And yet again, another 6 degrees of separation. You know, Tom Hiddleston's all about Hamlet, all about Othello, all about Romeo and Juliet, all about Shakespeare. Loves his Shakespeare. Sergeant Peter Godley, played by Robbie Coltrane, he quotes Shakespeare several times. He quotes from Hamlet twice. He quotes from Romeo and Juliet, Henry V, and he also references Othello a couple of times. So, yeah, one more. And another kind of interesting thing, Heather Graham started dating Heath Ledger during this filming. They were filming A Knight's Tale in an adjacent lot at the soundstage in Prague.
Oh.
Yep.
Wow, interesting. Paul Bettany was in that movie. He was a very good friend of Johnny Depp's.
He is. I don't think they had met yet. Well, no. When did... I don't have my other notebook in front of me. I'm trying to think if that was before or after The Tourist.
I'm pretty sure it was before.
So they hadn't met yet. Before. That is really funny. They're on opposing sound stages. They end up being really good friends, and at this point they hadn't met yet. That's really odd. Mm. Yo.
Well, you know, we're talking about Heather. Yeah, right. Well,
okay.
I don't know. You can't run into everybody.
I am so sorry. I was mistaken. The Hughes brothers originally wanted Daniel Day-Lewis as Aberlin. But then in a 1997 interview, Alan Moore said that the role had gone to Sean Connery. Sean Connery dropped out. Then they went and met with Brad Pitt and Jude Law until finally deciding that they figured that Johnny Depp would be the perfect person for the role. And they were right. He did great.
Yeah.
Now, this film was... it was filmed in and around Prague, Czech Republic. Sorry. Crackington Haven. Don't ask me where that's at, because I didn't tell me, and I couldn't find it, so I have the name. Boz Castle in Cornwall, which is also famous for, supposedly, that's where King Arthur was born. And Golding's Estate in Hertfordshire, as well as the massive backlot recreation of the 19th century Whitechapel district of London that was done at the Barrandov Studios in Prague. So they were kind of all over the place filming this. However, Alan Moore was not happy with the way they messed with his character, Aberline. He said that the replacing his gruff version of Aberline with a, quote, absinthe-swilling dandy was ridiculous. But, yeah, he was not happy. But he's never happy with what they do with his comics.
Ever.
No. Uh-uh. And, of course, I don't know. I would probably be the same way. If I created something and you took it and said, you know what, I like it better this way, I would probably be wanting to look at you and tell you to kiss my ass, too.
You know, Alan Moore always does these huge, huge, huge pieces. And when you look at From Hell, it was, when you collect it, it's easily more than 600, 700 pages. And you're going to put it into a 2-hour, 15-minute movie. I mean, a lot of his stuff, many people say it's just unfilmable just because of the sheer volume, much less trying to, you know, convey the emotional stuff that he does. From Hell was a massive, massive, massive work when you put it all together.
Yes.
And,
agreed. Absolutely agreed. You're right. I mean, and I've bitched and moaned and whined and complained about the Harry Potter series. You know, the bigger the books get, the less the movies are like the books, and the last movie wasn't like the book at all. You know, just,
right.
But these guys, they have to work with the time they have. So, you know, I need to be reminded every now and then, you know what, cut them some slack. They're doing the best they can.
Well, they're doing the best they can, but they aren't going to satisfy what
no.
you And you are the guy that has the spirit of it.
Right.
And no.
Yeah, but you still got to cut them some slack, man. You know.
You got to cut them some slack, but when people say, were you happy with it? No.
No.
They shouldn't have done. He has always maintained, Alan Moore is one of those guys that has always maintained, I hate when they say, we're going to make your work into a film. And they always assume I'm going to be impressed because I'm now, you know, doing stuff for the movies. It's like none of the things I have ever done has ever been intended to be made.
Right, because there's too much of it.
Right.
It's like the Harry Potter book series. Yeah, it's 7 books. The original series is 7 books. You wouldn't think that would be that difficult, but I'm telling you what, right now, if you took and did a... let's say a year-long miniseries for each book, you would still not have enough time to keep everything from the books in the stage performance. It's impossible. There's just too much of it there. So taking that and compressing it into even a 6-hour, 7-hour movie would be tough. These guys put it into the last book, they put in 2 2-hour movies. Kind of impressive, kind of not as good as the books, but impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, when putting a big, you know, work into a 2-hour, 15-minute movie, certainly it's not gonna.
And still making it make sense.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people that are creators, like big creators, have been a little more happy that, like, HBO is sending it in a series. And so you can get a few seasons into it, like George R. R. Martin in Game of Thrones.
Right.
That's better than, we're going to make a Game of Thrones movie. You know, that's going to be like 2 hours and 15 minutes. No, no.
And you're looking around going, what happened? I don't know.
No. Yeah, it's a mess. So.
However, There is one series they completely dropped the ball on. Completely from the first 5 minutes of the first episode. Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time. They can call it Wheel of Time all they want. It's not Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time. End of story.
Right, right.
I mean, they did. They changed the characters. They changed the storyline way too much. They didn't just tweak it here and there. They completely revamped a couple of the characters, and it upset me. Man, these characters are the way they are for a reason. You can't just change it and expect the fans to be happy.
That's right.
But anyway, yeah. But you're right. 99 out of 100 times, your miniseries are going to be much, much better, or your series are going to be much, much better for keeping all the pertinent information than movies are. That being said, they did take quite a bit of artistic license with this movie, deviating from the actual story of Jack the Ripper. But one of the things they did not play with at all are the crime scenes. They are as exact as they could get without filming the actual crime scenes when they happened. I mean, they took measurements, they did everything.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. After Jack the Ripper has killed his final victim, there's a police officer who is describing the scene so that it can be written down and put into evidence. Okay, do you remember that scene?
Yeah.
Those lines are taken directly from the real life crime scene report.
Interesting.
Yeah. They also, the wounds inflicted on the victims, they took great pains to get those as precise as possible as well, with one exception, and that's the very last one. Because that one, they were afraid they would get taken from R to NC-17 if they had done that one correctly.
Yeah.
It was, I'm not going to go into detail. I'm just not going to do it. It was bad.
Spoilers.
No, it's not about spoilers. I'm talking about the actual, what happened to this girl.
Well, I mean, like, no descriptors.
Yeah, none needed, and you're not going to get them here. Uh-uh. Read it, and I can't get it out of my head. But, yeah, it was very, very bad, and they really were worried that it was too much for the viewing audience. And I have to agree with them. Normally, I'm like, oh, come on, man. Everybody knows it's a movie. No, this time, I think they had it right.
Right.
Yup. And,
the Hughes brothers, man.
I'm telling you, they, ooh.
You know, it wasn't, I remember when this came out, their directorial debut was Menace to Society and Boys in the Hood. It was a big thing, you know, somewhere around 92, 93. These were like guys that were giving you the authentic, what they would call urban,
right?
You know, experience. And then they did Presidents. And, you know, a few years later, they did Book of Eli.
Wow.
But, you know, that being said, From Hell is singularly like the one movie that's not like the others.
Right. One of these things just doesn't belong here.
Well, that being said, they ended up coming onto the scene directing this thing, and they set up like graphic photographs, you know, for the actors to experience.
Yep.
And they took actual transcripts, and they really put their heart, obviously, into the project.
They went so far as to talk to John Douglas. Now, you probably don't know who that is. Most people don't. John Douglas?
Who is John Douglas?
John Douglas was the head of the FBI's Investigative Support Unit. Not only was he that, he is also credited along with Robert Ressler, I believe. Yeah. Robert Ressler with pioneering what we call criminal profiling today.
Oh, and they talked to him.
Yes, yes, they talked to him, got his take on it. He liked the idea of the Ripper in the movie. However, he did say that the actual Ripper, Jack the Ripper murders were the work of a disorganized, paranoid personality, not the calm, calculating killer that's shown in the movie.
Right. And I think I have heard that, you know, when we talk about Jack the Ripper.
Yep. And, you know, like I said, they did take a lot of creative license with this. Mm-hmm. You see the women that were murdered, you see them together in several different... There were rumors and speculation as to whether these women knew each other. There is no proof at all that the actual murder victims did, in fact, know each other. There's no proof of it.
Apparently, during the time period, there were a lot of prostitutes that were about in London.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Mary Kelly is quoted as saying, "What's wrong? You think I was born a whore?" Oh, that's right. England doesn't have whores, just a great many very unlucky women.
Right.
Yep, and that was the time period. I mean, it was rough. God knows being single today is not easy. Please, I would hate to be a single woman in that time period.
No kidding.
Whew. But, let's see, matter of fact, we were talking about Trevor Jones, the composer. You know, he was the first one to sign on to this project.
Mm-hmm.
It actually, the idea of this project was conceived in 1998. Trevor Jones was the first person on board, and he finally, after 3 years, was finally able to compose and record his score in early 2001. After waiting 3 years.
That's pretty outstanding.
Yeah.
And he's considered one of the greater English composers. He's kind of on par with John Williams and the way we treat him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I equate him up there with Danny Elfman.
Oh, sure.
I mean, and I'd say he would be the English version of Danny Elfman. And Danny Elfman being the American side.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean... And apparently he is as well known, if not better known, than Danny Elfman. So.
Well, yeah, as the BAFTA Awards, you know, the British people.
Right.
They would certainly put him on a massive pedestal.
But they would do it in such a way that they wouldn't embarrass them.
No, certainly not. Accolades all around.
Absolutely. Another one of the, artistic differences that they did was, now in the movie, Prince Albert Victor is depicted as dying of syphilis. There's actually no evidence at all that he ever had syphilis. He actually died at the age of 28 in 1892 of influenza. yep. So,
very interesting.
Well, they did kind of the same thing with Aberline. Aberline? Yeah,
so he wasn't an absent swilling dandy?
Number one, there was no evidence that he was an opium user.
Right.
Number two, there's no way that he said he was clairvoyant. He did not claim to be psychic, which he does in the movie, so.
Right.
But yeah.
And in the From Hell graphic novels.
Right, in the graphic novel as well, yeah. And the original Aberline died in 1929. He was 86 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been pretty remarkable for a 19th, early 20th century opium user.
Well, hey, if he was an opium user, I would absolutely expect him to claim to be psychic.
Yeah.
but let's see. And the original Frederick Aberline was in charge of the East End Ripper investigation. Now, Robbie Coltrane's character, George Godley, based on a sergeant at the Bethnal Green at the time of the murders of the same name. But they kind of, they said Johnny Depp's character was strictly Aberdeen. Robbie Coltrane's character, just kind of based, loosely kind of based on him. So, a little different.
Right.
Yeah, this was originally marked as a Mel Gibson directed project. Why that did not happen, I have no idea. I could not find any information on that. So, now I did say how accurate they tried to make everything, right?
Yes.
There is only one location that is not correctly identified in the movie from the Ripper murders. And that is when Annie Chapman gets murdered. When she gets into the coachman says he'll take her to Hanover Street. Point of fact, Annie, was murdered in Hanbury Street, which is actually still in the same place today in England.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's the only one that is mislabeled, miscalled, misnamed. The rest are probably pinpoint accurate, so. Yeah, they really, really pulled out all the stops to make sure that at least the horror of it was as correctly portrayed as they could do it. And I mean, you got to give them credit for that. This is, everybody is all, oh, Jack the Ripper, you know, and he killed all these people. But they don't really think about what that means. You know, these people died. This guy actually killed these women and did horrible things to their bodies. It's,
oh, yeah.
You know, and yeah, we watch the movie and it's entertainment. I don't think the girls were that entertained, you know? But the fact that they did get, they took great pains to make sure they got that part as accurate as possible. Hey, kudos. They deserve it. It's a great kind of tribute. You know what I mean?
I do.
Let's see. Let's see. Oh, and for anyone who's interested, the way they do the movie, it kind of makes you think that the murders happened over a very, very tiny little, like, week, 2 weeks time span, right?
Right.
It really does. It gives you a very, yeah, quick, fast pace. Actually, these murders, the first one was Marianne Nichols, and she was murdered on August 31st, 1888. The last one was Mary Jane Kelly, and hers was on November 9th, 1888. So it was over a span of several months that these murders actually occurred.
Yeah.
Now, there's been rumors, and I mean, I know you've heard them too, because of course Jack the Ripper was never caught. The doctor was suspected. Even some of the police force was suspected. Commander Warren, I believe, what his name was. Let's see. Give me just a second. Charles Warren, yes. Police Commissioner Charles Warren was also one of those that was suspected. Now, one of the accuracies, or inaccuracies, if you want to call it, was originally at the original, when it actually happened, Police Commissioner Charles Warren never went to the final crime scene. Well, never officially went to the final crime scene. Even though all of the other women had been murdered out on the street and in the open, he ordered, if there was another murder, that no one was to enter the crime scene before he arrived. Now, number one, you can't enter a street because it's right there, it's open. Just kind of sounded a little weird, but he gave that order, and then he resigned his commission. So, then, the final victim turns up. And the rest of the police force waited for 3 hours before entering the crime scene, waiting on Warren, who was never going to arrive because he had already resigned, but no one knew it. So, you know, that kind of makes you wonder. That's one of the reasons that he was suspected eventually.
Yeah.
Was because of the oddness of the timing for that. So, but yeah, of course, we will probably never know. I mean, I can't imagine that they would be able to, quote, solve it now, but, yeah, you never know. Science is insane, so, but yeah, God, who were some of the others that were suspected? The prince himself was suspected for a while.
There was, John Netley.
Right.
The guy that was the coachman, the cab driver,
right,
if you will, that was, yeah, and he was a strong, strong suspect as at least being, like, the driver or the stooge.
Basically, they knew he knew something.
Right.
But they couldn't prove it.
Right.
Yup. Yeah, of course, at that point in time, I'm really surprised that they were able to solve mention any kind of crime back then. I mean, you look at what we've got now and still 90% of the murders go unsolved. So, hey, those guys did good.
Yeah, well, and they weren't used to this sort of, you know, murders and, you know, a prostitute getting killed or what have you. Okay, you know, sure. But, like, you know, serial killers, a methodical killer.
And someone that was so, destructive.
Premeditated evil and with a motive. And Americans really didn't get that. I mean, maybe, what's his name,
Albert Fish. But even Albert Fish.
The Black Dahlia murders, you know.
Even Albert Fish only murdered, he only murdered a couple of people before he was caught.
Yeah, but that diabolic.
Right.
You know, we hear about people, you know, that kill their victims and dissect them, sever them. You know, the Black Dahlia murders, you know, that woman was cut in half completely. A murder? Well, you know, that's one thing.
It does happen, but this type of thing, you're right. This just,
you know, and of course, you know, Scotland Yard wouldn't know how to deal.
And
that's kind of what helped Jack the Ripper be so successful.
He went
so over the top.
They were really just literally kind of wringing their hands and praying that he would go away because they truly did not have any idea how to handle it. And the fact that
they were completely unprepared.
Well, yeah, how could you prepare? It had never happened before.
Right.
And the graphic nature.
Exactly.
You know, murder. Okay. A prostitute got choked. Okay. You know, it does happen. It's unfortunate, but it happened. Oh, no, you know, the prostitute got dismembered and her bowels were hung up like garlands around the room.
Exactly. And then it happened again, you know.
And again.
And then it
happened to two of them at once.
Right.
Yeah, that was, now that's what really had them stumped in the original, crime spree, was one woman they could see being overpowered by a man, that it was only, you know, they were still hoping that there was only one person involved as far as the killer goes. But then they found Miss Elizabeth Stride and Miss Catherine Eddowes together on September 30th, 1888. And they're like, okay, how would one man be able to restrain and control two women at the same time by himself without, you know, without one of them at least getting to a door, giving him a kick in the nuts, doing something.
Right.
You know, so yeah, that really flipped them out when that happened. But there were a few faux pas in the movie that I found extremely interesting. Now, while they're at, like, the hospital and stuff, there you see several lobotomies being performed. Now, this is in 1888. The process that they were using was first performed in Switzerland in 1890 and did not become common until at least 10 years after that. So, I love this. No, I'm not going to get on my soapbox, but I really, really love this. England actually has something called the Act of Settlement 1701. Now, in the movie, they start talking about the son of Prince Albert Victor and Anne Crook, and they're calling him a prince, an heir, you know, to the throne, to the UK throne. Yeah, no. According to the Act of Settlement, 1701, it specifically forbids Roman Catholics, or Catholics of any kind, from holding the throne or claiming marriage to a royal family member. Prince Albert Victor could have stayed in the line of royal succession only by disavowing his wife, and the son would never be a prince or eligible for succession unless Parliament decided to pass a special vote to adopt him into the system. And I thought that was just wild. I mean, you know, I get we came over here to America for freedom of religion and all that, but I'm used to the Protestant religion being the one that's persecuted.
Well, you know, they fled England, the American settlers, for freedom of religion over a Protestant. It didn't have anything to do even with Catholicism.
Oh, I just meant recently. Your Roman Catholics have gotten so huge and so powerful that they kind of tend to lord over pretty much every other religion they try. So I'm used to the Roman Catholics being the persecution, not the one that's persecuted. So that just really struck me as funny that England actually, and it's still in effect to this day, that you cannot be Catholic and be in succession for the crown. And you cannot be in succession for the Scottish crown. You cannot be in succession for any of the crowns that are associated with England. So, it struck me as odd. It just struck me as funny. They also use a lot of English or American words, phrases, colloquialisms in the movie. One of which, Eberlein tells Mary Kelly that they should pass notes through the barkeep of a nearby inn. The term barkeep, that's an American thing. In England, it would be the barman. Or if he just worked there, it'd be the barman. Or if he actually owned the place, it would be the landlord. So, but they did use quite a bit of, like I said, the more American terms and stuff. And we all know why. Because Americans live for our movies. And they didn't want to alienate their biggest fan base. You still there?
I am.
You are really quiet tonight.
Well, I was letting you finish.
Okay.
yeah, you're definitely blasting this evening.
It's been a really long week, guys. It's been a very exciting week. And, yeah, so...
Yeah, you've been very, like, kind of staccato and just... I'm like, all right, let it go.
I am so sorry, guys. I do apologize if I seem a bit abrupt. Yeah, it's just, like I said, it's been a very long week. It's been a very... It's only Wednesday. It's not even been a week yet. But there's been a lot of things going on, a lot of things happening. So, if I do seem a bit out of sorts, I'll be over it by next week. I promise, guys.
Okay.
However, I was thinking, Mr. Carey, okay, so we've got Hiddleston next week. Another quote I just ran across.
Yeah, right.
Oh, sorry. It's just...
It's
another 6 degrees of separation, which is why it struck me. I don't think I've ever heard Johnny Depp use the word cunt in a movie before.
Okay.
But, you know, Tom Hiddleston called Scarlett Johansson a mewling quim. Aberline calls Sir Charles Warren a fucking cunt. So,
yeah.
another one.
I get to hear Johnny Depp use cunt.
Come on, man. He's teaching his fellow actors and actresses how to look naked while not being naked. So, using the word cunt, really, that's kind of a stretch.
Yep. It was part of the script, though. You know, I think it was part of the comics.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's like seeing, Santa Claus when he's off duty. Saying something about Archie bitches. Yeah, it's kind of that kind of feeling. Yeah, that's not right.
Yeah. No, I can see Johnny using the word cunt with a little bit of frequency.
I can't see him doing it with a straight face.
Really?
Not with a straight face. Not unless he was pissed.
Gotcha.
Yeah, if he was mad, maybe I could see it. But just like goofing around and kind of goofing off, I couldn't see him using it. He's got too much respect. So. But, this is actually a very fantastic movie. I hate to say it, but I think my favorite scene in the movie, in the actual movie, not the real killings, is the very end when Coltrane's character, Godley, goes to find Aberline, and he's in the opium den, and Godley just pulls a couple coins out of his pocket. The coins are laying on the table, aren't they? And he picks them up and lays them over his eyes because he doesn't even have to check. He knows the man's dead.
Right.
Yep.
Laying down his eyes.
I just thought that was very sweet. And very touching, and it was just very cool.
Yeah. That was a nice Hughes Brothers touch.
Yeah, and for any of you who don't know it, the coins on the eyes is to pay the ferryman who takes you from the land of the living to the land of the dead. That is the tradition. Do you have a favorite scene? Terry?
I probably would say, when Aberline starts talking about the Freemasons being involved, in the murders, and there's a lot of people, it's when he starts kind of connecting things to Prince Albert, and Albert died of syphilis.
Right.
But Gull ends up telling Aberline he's going to be remembering history for giving birth to the 20th century, and Aberline drawing his gun and telling him, "You will not see the 20th century."
Yeah, I almost wrote that quote down too. Love that.
Yep.
I really did.
But he ended up getting knocked out, and a Freemason knocked him out. I loved that scene.
Yes, that
was really, really cool.
And I did run across quite a bit of the research they did into the Freemasons. However, the Freemasons are still very real, very prevalent, and very here. So I chose to leave that alone.
Hey,
my dad was...
That's my favorite scene, and I'm going to kind of leave it there.
Well, I actually asked my dad about this, because he was a Freemason. My mom was an Eastern Star. I mean, it's a thing down here in the South. He said that he thought the ritualistic part that you saw was a bit over the top, was how he put it. He wouldn't give me any specifics as to why he thought it was so over the top or what was right and what was not, of course. That's, I mean, you're sworn to secrecy. That part is absolutely true. But, okay. But yeah, he was just like, it's not quite like that. Okay. But yeah, the secrecy, the secret orders, all of that. When, Aberlin starts linking the Freemasons into part of what he's investigating.
I kind of thought it was cool.
Very cool. And the fact that, of course, he did not jump up and say, okay, we found them. It's a cult. Let's get them.
Right.
You know, because that, unfortunately, was the attitude of the day, usually. So, but yeah. He did his job. He checked things out. And I do like the fact that they kind of portrayed, okay, you know who the killer is. Aberlin knows who the killer is. But the person you think the killer is not really the killer.
Right.
There's something going on internally.
I mean, that's the story of Jack the Ripper, really.
Yup. And it's like, yeah, it's his buddy, but that's not him. Yeah, that's not him. He's not doing that. So, yeah, like multiple personality or demon possession or, I kind of vacillate between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they really don't give you a solid explanation, which they're not supposed to. You're supposed to figure it out.
That's right.
Figure it out to your own satisfaction. But yeah, I just really love the way they did that and how it all just kind of works together and clicks at the very end. Just pop, and you're like, oh shit, wow.
Yeah, great film.
Very good. And, tremendous cast of characters. Directors, producers, they were all absolutely amazing. There is one other actor I would like to mention. Because I have not done it yet. And guess what? We found, 8 Hiddleston Johnny Depp points in this movie already?
Yeah.
I got another one for you.
Later.
Okay, he doesn't even have his character doesn't even have a name in this movie. He plays Constable Number 3. It's the very first movie that he was ever in. And this particular actor's name is...
Cooper.
Ah! Really? You couldn't let me be dramatic? Yes,
we
Dominic Cooper. We're only at 102. We're going
to
kill it in about 2 minutes. But yeah, Dominic Cooper, who also went on to play Sky in Mamma Mia and The Young Howard Stark. In the MCU.
Yeah, he was in 300.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, this was his first movie. He was a big stage actor before this. Broadway, some in England, some here in the States. Lots and lots and lots of stage acting. But they, for some reason, they found him, they liked him, and here he is. But yeah, he's, I really, really love this guy. He's a great actor. I think he's fantastic.
He was awesome in Preacher.
Yes.
Which is a DC property.
I know. How does that work?
Yep. He has actually done Marvel and DC.
Right. Which, there's a couple actors that can get away with that.
Yeah.
But, you let RDJ try to do a DC movie. That ain't going to happen.
Well, he did Marvel Cinematic and he did DC Television.
Right, yeah, right.
Preacher was TV, so kind of in a way it doesn't count.
So, I wouldn't say it doesn't count, but it doesn't compete.
I agree.
It doesn't compete.
Oh. I would say it definitely competes. Preacher was brilliant. Actually, I dare say Preacher was better than... he was young Stark in Agent Carter.
Right.
And then he was the preacher in Preacher.
Right.
And he was infinitely better, and the television show Preacher was infinitely, 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 infinitely better than Agent Carter.
Well.
Yeah, it competes in...
The only reason I said it doesn't compete, I was more referring to, I wasn't referring to Marvel versus DC. I was more referring to movies versus television. You're not going to go, oh, I'm not going to watch this series today because I'm going to the movies, click. No, like you would if you had another TV series on at or around the same time.
Well, you know, it really kind of seems to me the MCU, like the Marvel movies, are better than the DC movies.
But oh, yeah.
The DC TV series are much better than the Marvel TV series.
Oh, with great restraint, I am definitely going to have to agree with you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The only DC movie that I think really kind of almost equals the Marvel is Suicide Squad. And that is given largely to the cast of characters they've got.
The first Suicide Squad.
Yes, the original.
Yeah.
Not Birds of Prey, the first one.
Yep. Agreed.
Because, I mean, you've got a huge cast of characters on that one, too. So,
yeah, you do.
All right, guys, we have gone a little bit over. We're about 6 minutes over now, so I'm going to wrap this up real quick. We'll figure out what we're doing next week, I promise. DepheadsHiddleStoners.com is how you get to the blog. You can go through BarryReese.net, click on the link. You can find us at Depheads and Hiddlestoners group on Facebook, Depheads and Hiddlestoners on Instagram. Or you can go to our blog. You can email us at depheadsandhiddlestoners@yahoo.com. Let me spit it out. And long as all is well, we're going to be having a fantastic anniversary celebration come the Halloween week in October. So stay tuned. Awesome. We'll see you then.
All right.
And hopefully we'll see you next week too. Y'all have a good one. Stay safe.
Peace and love.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye.